This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Mitch Teich. Since 2015, the so-called John Doe investigation surrounding financing and the campaign of Governor Scott Walker has been closed, ordered terminated by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and the record surrounding it forever sealed. But the second part of that equation changed yesterday when The Guardian U.S., the American-based publication of the British newspaper The Guardian, published 1,500 pages of leaked documents from the investigation. The paper trail appears to show a very close link, if not an illegal one, between Scott Walker's campaign committee and the so-called social welfare group, the Wisconsin Club for Growth. The article was reported by The Guardian's chief U.S. reporter, Ed Pilkington, who joins us by phone from New York. Welcome to the show.
Great to be with you.
I feel like I have to start this way. Can you tell us anything about how or maybe when these documents ended up in the possession of The Guardian?
Yeah, you won't be surprised that we're not going to discuss sources. All I can say is that I've been working on the documents for several months now. We received a stash of 1,500 pages of documents. They do include some duplicates, but it's still a huge sort of pile of material to work our way through. And it's all quite technical and tricky, but we tried in the end to distill out of it a story that was comprehensible to readers, not only in Wisconsin, but also across the country.
And given the sheer magnitude of the number of documents you received, how difficult was it to come up with the through line that shows up in this piece?
Well, you know, once you get familiar with the documents, I should say that anyone who wants to read them can do so on our website. We've posted them all, barring some light redaction. We've removed personal information. We didn't want to cause any inconvenience for individuals, so we've removed cell phone numbers, home addresses, and things like that. But otherwise, it's all there for people to look into themselves, and they can, you know, take their own judgment on the material and also have their own go at trying to draw their own conclusions from it. Once you get familiar with the documents, it takes a while to do that, and that's partly why it took us so long to produce our articles. But once you do get familiar with them, you start to see patterns emerging, and you start to get familiar with the characters who are there, and you start to see how things are working. In particular, the relationship between Scott Walker's personal campaign committee, outside lobbying groups, so-called dark money groups that don't have to disclose their sources of donation, and several very big name, super wealthy individual right-wing funders of politicians, notably people like Sheldon Adelson in Las Vegas, Paul Singer, the Home Depot founder Ken Langone, and people like that. So, you know, after a while, things start to repeat and crop up over and over again, and you start to see patterns forming. And that's when we felt that we really kind of understood what these documents were telling us.
Now, people who oppose or opposed the John Doe investigation at the center of all this point to a statement by then-prosecutor Francis Schmitz through, a spokesman, that Scott Walker himself was not a target of the investigation. So who or what does it turn out was the target, the so-named movement number one?
Yes, that was a strange comment from the special prosecutor, the chief prosecutor of the five who conducted the John Doe investigation over several years. He did say a couple of years ago that Scott Walker was not a target of their investigation. The documents that we received and we have published show very clearly that there were six people named as movants, a technical phrase for people who are subjects of the investigation. You can use the word targets if you choose. I would say the word subjects. I think targets is slightly pejorative. Subjects is more neutral. You have to bear in mind they never got to the stage where they actually pressed charges.
Sure.
And they hadn't completed their investigation by the time it was shut down by the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So to some degree, things were left hanging in the air. But nevertheless, movant or subject or target, if you want to use the word, number one was Friends of Scott Walker, which is the personal campaign committee of Scott Walker. Now, you can split hairs legally and say that's not Scott Walker, but it was his personal campaign committee, and I think for most people, the two things are pretty hard to separate.
Well, so the question that's been asked, whether there was actual coordination between Scott Walker's campaign, this personal campaign committee, as you say, and a supposedly outside group, the Wisconsin Club for Growth, what do these documents show in that regard?
Well, they show, again, on a sort of layperson's level, they show a very intimate relationship between Scott Walker's campaign committee and Wisconsin Club for Growth, which was this outside conservative group set up as a 501c4, which is a tax-exempt group, supposedly non-partisan political. It's meant to be a social welfare group, which has opinions about subjects, but is not meant to be party political in a partisan sense. And yet there was this very, very close relationship involving individuals, endless emails between them, and very, very often, this is the kind of pattern that I talked about emerging from the documents, you would see a fundraising visit arranged for Governor Walker to one of many super wealthy individuals or corporations. He traveled the country, went down to Texas several times, he went across to New York, he met all these super wealthy people, and then, you know, a few days later, a check would arrive. And the significant point about it was that the check would land not in the bank account of his own personal campaign committee, friends of Scott Walker, but it would land into the bank account of Wisconsin Club for Growth.
And a quick tutorial for people who may have forgotten, why was it important that these checks would go to the Wisconsin Club for Growth as opposed to directly to Scott Walker's campaign committee?
Well, the legal issue is very, very complicated, and the law of campaign finance is notoriously, fiendishly difficult to understand and very, very lightly and rarely actually enforced. So the question of was that a violation of campaign finance law is a matter of much heated debate that's been going on for several years in Wisconsin. And to some degree, we won't know the answer to that until the U.S. Supreme Court, which is the nation's highest court, announces later this month whether it will hear a petition from the Wisconsin prosecutors who have asked for a review into the decision to shut them down, which happened last year. So until the U.S. Supreme Court gives their clear understanding of whether campaign finance violations happened or not, we don't fully know whether what happened here was in tune with the law of campaign finance, either in Wisconsin or in the nation. But again, kind of on a lay level, I think many people would find it odd, potentially disturbing, that a senior politician and his campaign finance committee would arrange for very large sums of money, we're talking several million dollars, to be directed to a third-party group to which they were supposedly unattached. And importantly, that third-party group did not have to disclose the sources of its income. So what does that mean? It means, in effect, that the Wisconsin public, the voters of Wisconsin, they had no awareness of what that money, where it's coming from, where it's going to, and what it was being used for. And in any election, you might say the most important thing is that the voters make their decision on who they're going to vote for in full transparency and with full information about who they're voting for and what they're getting involved with.
And interestingly, you write that no less an individual than Donald Trump is an example of how things played out between the governor, well-heeled individuals, and donations to the Wisconsin Club for Growth.
That's right. We see on one of the trips that Governor Walker made to New York, a fundraising trip, he goes up and down Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, and he visits several big places like big banks, hedge fund managers, a major international law firm, and then he stops off for 45 minutes in the headquarters of Donald Trump in Fifth Avenue, and they have a meeting. We don't know anything about the meeting. There is no transcript. There is no record of the discussion between them, but on the very same day, a check for $15,000 is written by Donald Trump, and where does it go to? It goes to Wisconsin Club for Growth. It doesn't go to Scott Walker, and that check can be found among the documents that we've posted on our website. Now, again, Scott Walker and Wisconsin Club for Growth would both say that there was nothing illegal, nothing wrong whatsoever in that relationship between senior politician and an outside lobby group that happened to share his political principles, and that the arrangement in which money came was arranged by Scott Walker but went to Wisconsin Club for Growth was fully legal and fully above board. And that, again, that may very well be the case in actually in law, but I think for many people, they would feel rather queasy about the fact that none of this was public. It was all done behind closed doors, and it was all secret, and Wisconsin voters had no idea about it happening.
This was presumably all made possible through the Citizens United decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, but you write about that. How does this line up with the decision as it was written by the Supreme Court?
That's right. I mean, Citizens United has become the sort of battleground over campaign finance in America. What most people know about it is that the 2010 ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court, it gave corporations the same First Amendment rights of free speech as people. It essentially said, you are a big business, you're a person, and therefore you have total rights to spend as much money as you like on any election, and you can try and influence it in any way. And people know that that unleashed a flood of corporate money into the electoral process. One other thing that people have tended to forget, which was made very strongly in the same ruling, Citizens United, was that the justice who wrote it, Anthony Kennedy, he said very clearly that corporations must remain detached, totally separate from, and no coordination must take place between the corporation and the political candidate who they're trying to support. And it will be interesting to see later this month when the U.S. Supreme Court indicates whether it's going to take the petition for review from the Wisconsin prosecutors who carried out the John Doe investigation. It'll be interesting to see whether they take that, because it'll be interesting to see whether they feel, the justices, the U.S. Supreme Court justices feel, that the law has slipped a bit and they need to tighten it up again in terms of exactly what they mean by the word coordination.
Well, was there any indication that either the Wisconsin Club for Growth or the Friends of Scott Walker attempted to institute any kind of firewall between the two organizations?
We did find a few, it has to be said, only a few documents in the 1,500 pages that we received that showed them discussing a need for the firewall. There's one between Scott Walker's top aide, Keith Gilks, at the time, saying he couldn't discuss an issue of various posters being put up in Wisconsin to do with the recall election that the Republicans were going through. He said he couldn't discuss it because there had to be a firewall between him and the campaign. He was working for Scott Walker as a government official at the time. So there is some indication of a firewall, but it's not very extensive. And I have to say there's also a ton more evidence in the documents that suggests that there was very little separation. There were very few degrees of separation between Scott Walker's campaign committee and these outside groups through which they were channeling large sums of money. Again, was that illegal? That's a matter of some dispute. We'll have to wait to see for the U.S. Supreme Court what it says about that. But it was certainly something that I think a lot of people would find questionable, at least.
Well, and can you connect the dots for us? Where did the ongoing legal issues surrounding lead paint enter this picture?
Well, one of the huge issues behind campaign finance law, I mean, you have to ask yourself, what's it for? Is it because, you know, we have to have some bureaucratic law that tells you only so much money can be spent on an election? That's not really what it's about. I mean, the most important thing about campaign finance law is that it's designed to prevent corruption, specifically quid pro quo, the idea that you give cash and in return you get favors back from a politician. And in multiple U.S. Supreme Court rulings going back decades, that the justices have underlined the need very strictly to prevent any risk of corruption, and not only risk of corruption, but also the risk of appearing to be corrupt, which they say can corrode public faith in democracy. So we were kind of alive to that issue as we went through the documents, and we did come across a case that raised our eyebrows, and I think may raise eyebrows for other readers, which is that $750,000 were donated in three different tranches from a multimillionaire or billionaire called Harold Simmons, who happened to be Texas-based. He's a well-known conservative funder of right-wing causes. He actually died in 2013, but he was a well-known figure, but he lived in Texas. So what is he giving $750,000 to Wisconsin for? we asked that question, and we came up with the answer that one of his major holdings was NL Industries, which historically was a manufacturer of lead paint before it was banned in 1978. And NL Industries was being sued multiple times by victims of lead paint poisoning, not least in Milwaukee, where many victims have cropped up from very old rundown houses where the paint peels off and you can get toxin going into your lungs. At the same time, around roughly the same time frame as these three checks arrived from Harold Simmons in Texas, the Republican group in the legislature in Wisconsin made several efforts to change the law to make it much more difficult to sue historic manufacturers of lead paint for lead paint poisoning. And as we say in the piece, there's no evidence from the documents that this amounted to overt corruption. But we do ask the question, does this at least give the appearance of potential quid pro quo? And if so, how concerned should the people of Wisconsin and beyond that, the people of America, be about it? And we kind of leave that question hanging in the air as we feel it goes to the heart of why, you know, this stash of complicated stuff, you know, this is not easy stuff to read. It's complicated, but we feel it goes to the heart of why this stuff is important.
As the reporter who pored through hundreds and hundreds of pages of these documents, it still must have been something of a jaw dropper to have seen what was written on one of the checks made out to the Wisconsin Club for Growth.
Yes, because Scott Walker asked, yes, we all, when we saw that, we sort of stopped, took a breath and thought, okay, this tells us something. This captures something. It captures the spirit of what's going on here. And I think that, again, that also goes to the heart of it. It captures the spirit of a world of modern American democracy that is not by any means limited to Wisconsin, nor is it limited to the Republican Party. You know, we should say that strongly. I think several Democratic politicians are playing very similar games, partly because they have to. In the modern world, if you don't keep up with pulling in tons of corporate money, then you're going to fall behind and you're going to lose the election. So it's become a competitive race to get more and more corporate money on board. We felt, because Scott Walker asked, sort of summed up something about the modern world of American democracy, where it matters as much how much corporate money you can get into your to back you in an election as it does about the quality of your ideas and the quality of your leadership as a politician.
People described the Citizens United decision as letting the genie out of the bottle. Do you think this is an up-close look at the genie?
Precisely, and that's exactly, I'm glad you put it like that, because it's exactly what we thought it was. I think since Citizens United happened 6 years ago, there's been a sense of free-for-all. Like, anything goes. There are no rules, there are no regulations. It's kind of okay to do pretty much anything you like. But there are consequences of that for all of us, notably the amount of money pouring into elections. Is it distorting the outcome of them? You know, is more money going to one type of politician than another type of politician? Should corporations make the decision of who wins elections rather than voters? And then that big question about the appearance of possible quid pro quo, of cash for favors, that we think the lead story raises. And, you know, again, are people comfortable with that? So some very, very big questions about the way things are now being done. And we think that the documents that we were handed point to a lot of those questions and beg pretty big questions.
Well, Ed Pilkington, it's incredibly thorough reporting. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks a lot.
Ed Pilkington is chief reporter for Guardian U.S. and led the paper's reporting on the John Doe investigation into the finances surrounding Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's campaign. The Guardian yesterday published 1,500 pages of documents from that investigation. You'll find a link from WUWM.com. Meanwhile, the Milwaukee County District Attorney's Office issued a statement yesterday afternoon that reads as follows: John Doe materials are secret materials. The public release of this John Doe evidence without court authorization is not merely a violation of the John Doe secrecy order. It is a crime under Wisconsin law. As Special Prosecutor Fran Schmitz has done in the past when other secret materials have been publicly disclosed, we support any effort that may be undertaken to determine the source of these newest leaks. Coming up next, we take a personal look into one family's story about loss and lessons learned surrounding addiction. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM.